the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Thanks, Simon. Let's read together, shall we? From John chapter 15 in the New Testament. John chapter 15, we're going to read verses 1 to 17. And that's, if you need the help, it's on page 1022. Do try and find it without if you possibly can. It's only the fourth book into the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, so it's not that difficult. And if you can count up to 15, you're there. Great. Let's read it then. John 15, verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. While every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean, already pruned, because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you're like a branch that's thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you'll remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because servants do not know their master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command: love each other. That's all we'll read this morning. And we're at the end of a series on the I Ams of John's Gospel. Seven great times, well, eight really, through John's Gospel, Jesus says, I am. And we've been looking at that series through the summer. We started off by looking at the Word become flesh in John chapter 1, the introduction to the whole thing. We then looked at what it means for Jesus to be the Messiah in John chapter 4, I that speak unto thee am he, I am. And then the great seven sayings that follow that, the bread of life. We talked about the light of the world. We talked about Jesus being the gates for the flock, and also the good shepherd. We combined that in one talk because obviously it fits together and comes from the same chapter. Jesus is the resurrection and the life. That was the next one. Last week, it was all about Jesus being the way, the truth, and the life. And this week, well, this week, it's about I am the true vine. And those sayings are obviously a very important structuring device in the way that John tells the story of Jesus. But you might think, oh, why I am all the time? Because I suppose it's in one way, it's just how you introduce yourself, isn't it? Hello, I'm Anthea's husband. Hello, I'm a member here at Belmont. Hello, and we say that kind of thing. I'm a research scientist. I'm a down and out. I'm a whatever, to introduce yourself. But there's more to it as far as Jesus is concerned, because the phrase he uses, ego eimi, in Greek, comes from the Old Testament. When Moses, way, way back, thousands of years before Jesus, asks this God that he's come into contact with, what is your name? What do I call you? God says, my ultimate name is this: I am who I am. And so when Jesus is saying, I am, He's not just saying, "Hi, I'm a village carpenter from Nazareth. Let me give you my card." He's not saying that. What he's saying is, "I am the I am. I am one with God." And so on those seven different occasions, he spells out exactly what he means. And this is the final one of the lot. "I am the true vine." Jesus says this on the night just before he's arrested and hustled through a trial and sent to his death. And one of the things you ought to notice when you read through John's Gospel is where and when things happen. Because often, John puts in these little indicators just to say something important through them. When Judas goes out, for instance, from the Last Supper, "And it was night," says John. And you get this incredible picture of Judas heading into the pitch black of defiance of his master, unfaithfulness to God, and all that kind of thing. On the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles, that's when Jesus stands and says, "If anybody's thirsty, let him come to me and drink." And when you look at what the Feast of Tabernacles meant and you unpack that, you see just why John has given you that little place indicator. And here, it's important when this happens. Look at the verse immediately before the passage we read at the end of chapter 14. "Come now, let us leave." The Last Supper is over. Jesus is on his way to Gethsemane. He knows what's going to happen that very night. He's going to be arrested. This is the last chance he'll ever have to say something to his disciples. And so he leaves his last "I am" for this moment, when they're all putting their coats on, if you like, when they're all getting ready to go out, and you find at the end of what he has to say here, they do go out. So this is almost a last, famous last words before Jesus goes to his death. And this is a different kind of "I am," I reckon, because it's not so much expressing what Jesus is, it's giving them instructions for how to live without Jesus. This is the last thing he wants to say, the last picture he wants to give them, because they are going to be living in the world as we are now, on their own, without their master. And it's important they understand how the whole thing fits together. Why the true vine? Well, that's because the vine was a picture of God's people right through the Old Testament. Isaiah chapter 5, for instance, talks about Israel's history as if God was a gardener who built a vineyard for himself. Dug it round, put a little tower in the middle of it, did everything he possibly could to produce great grapes. And he looked for good grapes, but, says Isaiah, it yielded only bad fruit. And the vineyard that was Israel produced disappointing vines all the way down through history. Jeremiah picked up the same picture and talks about the fact that God had planted his vineyard, the nation of Israel, with enormous care. And then they'd gone wandering off and doing all kinds of stuff they weren't supposed to. And he asked the question, because I planted you to do it properly, how did you turn into a corrupt wild vine growing all over the place, spreading out and wasting your energy, doing nothing, not producing fruit, but just doing whatever you felt like? And Isaiah talks about the positive side of the picture, saying, yes, this vineyard's run wild. This vineyard's produced bad grapes. But one of these days, he says, a shoot will rise up out of the stump of Jesse, the house of David, the royal family of Israel. Looks like a vine that's dead and withered and brittle and gone. But one of these days, you will see a little shoot coming up out of it. And that shoot will become a branch. And this branch will become somebody who bears fruit. And Isaiah talks about the one who is going to come, who's going to put all of God's plans and purposes together and be the true vine. And so Jesus is saying to his disciples, that's me. I am the true vine. I'm the one who will fulfill all of those promises that God made in the past, who will fulfill that mission that God gave to his people and they never actually got there with it. I am the true vine, and you're part of the story too. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because what Jesus is saying is not just something about himself, but about them. If he is the vine, how is he going to do all the things, bear all the fruit that Isaiah talks about? How is he going to bring all the lands to worship? How is he going to spread his name to the ends of the earth? How is he going to bring peace and justice in the earth? How is he going to end oppression? Well, he says here, I am the vine. You guys, you're the branches. You are the ones who will make this thing happen. Because the life of the vine flows into the branches, and it's on the branches, not on the central vine, that you see the fruit appearing. First a little bit, then more, then until you've got a full crop. The branches are super important. And you people, after I've gone, You are the branches, and it's the branches that bear the fruit. And so he's saying something about them as much as he is about himself. My life will go into you, and you will bear fruit. This is a guy who brought this message home to me once when I met him. I only met him once, and I was sad to find when I chased down his picture on the internet that he died 4 years ago. He was a great man. His name was Ed Rice. He was an American and a member of one of the earliest of the Navigators, a discipling organization that's done some fantastic work for God over the last 50, 60 years. And Ed Rice came to Oxford when I was a student there. I was about 19 or 20 at the time. We were coming up to a mission, and we'd asked the Navigators to send us somebody who could train the Christians in the CU in how to do personal evangelism. And Ed Rice gave us some fantastic lessons. He really did. He was very organized, a fantastic speaker. But the one thing I remember is that he quoted, and he made us learn over the four sessions that he did with us week by week, he made us learn and repeat again and again one verse out of this passage. And I think it's a central thing for the message that Jesus is trying to give here. And it's verse 16. He said, you can always remember it. John 15:16. If you know the number after 15, you're in business. 15:16. Easy to remember. And it's a verse that says, you did not choose me. If you are a Christian, that's no happy accident. That's no matter of your decision power or your ability to choose the right thing. It's a matter of my choice of you. And I chose you for a purpose. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you. For what? I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit. The fruit appears on the branches. Fruit that will last. It'll be no 5-minute thrill, no sudden wonder. It'll be something that goes on and on and on and changes history. And he made us learn that verse because he said, that's why you're in the world. That's why you're a Christian. This is your identity while you're here. This is what it's all about. If you don't get this verse firmly fixed in your head, you will not be doing the thing that God has called you to. And I must say that over the last 50 years since I had to learn that verse, thanks to Ed Rice bugging me, it's been an important verse to me. Let's try it. How does it start? You did not choose me. For what reason? I chose you and appointed you. That's right. So that, to go and bear fruit. And what kind of fruit? Absolutely. Good. Great. That's excellent. Right. We're going to try that a few more times in the course of this sermon because I want to copy Ed Rice. But let's see what happens. So, what's in this passage that we need to explore? First of all, according to Jesus, a good branch will do three things. A good branch will connect. It's connected to all of the other branches, and it's connected to the life of the vine. And Jesus says, if you've got a branch that doesn't bear fruit, if it's just dry and brittle and doing nothing, it's thrown into the fire and it burns. He's picking up an idea there from Ezekiel chapter 15. That's a little chapter where Ezekiel says, hey, what is vine wood good for? You know, there are some kinds of wood that are great when the tree is dead and gone. You know, teak, pine, you can make furniture out of it. What can you use vine wood for? And the answer Ezekiel gives is nothing, nothing at all. The only purpose in vine wood is to produce fruit. So if it's dead, if it's not producing fruit any longer, you throw it out. And Jesus is using the same image here, saying, listen, you are no good unless you're connected up to the life of the vine. The life is pulsing through you, and it's producing those little grapes at the end of the twigs. That's what it's all about. A good branch will remain as well. And Jesus says, remain in me, and I'll remain in you. Don't start out well and then give up because you get discouraged. Stay close to me. And the third thing is, you'll bear fruit. So let's look at those three things. And ask ourselves what fruit is and stuff like that when we get there. So first, connect. One of the great things about Christianity is that we are connected to the vine. Jesus is the center. If that's him, and those are all the other Christians around the world, one of the amazing things is that out of the... How many Christians are in the world? I don't know, really, because lots of the people who claim to be Christians aren't really. So if we say at least a billion, that would make sense. At least a billion people have an individual, unique connection to their leader. That is something, isn't it? Jesus isn't just somebody we admire. He's not somebody we just copy. He's not somebody we read about and wish we could meet. He's somebody who is there with us moment by moment, day by day. That is an incredible thing about Christianity. You don't find it in any other organization in the world. One of the most interesting books I've read just recently was by this guy, Erwin Bartmann. He was a young German soldier of 22, rather, at the end of the Second World War, and he'd become disillusioned. 4 years earlier, on May Day 1941, he had signed up for the crack SS unit in the German army, the Leibstandarte SS Adolf Hitler. It had Hitler's name, it was his personal bodyguard, and he idolized Hitler. He'd seen him as the great leader as he'd grown up as a teenager. And his book is called Für Volk und Führer, and it's about the way in which his view of Hitler changed as time went by. Because as the war went on, as you know, Hitler withdrew into himself. And from January 1945, he spent most of his time in this room, 55 feet below the surface of Berlin, in the bunker. He was harder and harder to get through to. He was more and more difficult to communicate with. And he just became more and more depressed as the situation got worse. And he spiraled away into wild fantasies about what he could do if only he wasn't betrayed by everybody around him. Here's the last picture, we believe, that was taken of Hitler. Just 2 days before his death, when he uncharacteristically came up out of his room to the surface of the bunker and had a look at the Chancellery Garden. And you can see how disillusioned, how remote he looks. And nobody, it would appear, could get through. And the sense of idolization of Hitler, the sense of having a contact with him, having some kind of understanding of him, just went. And Bartmann talks in his book about how at the end of the war, 4 years after he'd signed up and promised to give obedience unto death to Adolf Hitler, he was in a room in a place called Jerichow where he was on, kind of on the run. He was with a group of other Waffen-SS officers who'd been given shelter by a couple of girls, Lisa and Uta. And they were listening to the radio when suddenly the music faded and a solemn voice said, an important announcement will soon follow. A few minutes later, the strident voice of the radio announcer called out, Achtung, Achtung, an important announcement to the German people will follow shortly. It's the Wunderwaffe. We've won the war with a new wonder weapon, exclaimed Lisa, jumping to her feet. Her words, well, sit down, Lisa, said Uta with more than a bit of impatience. Just sit and listen. We waited expectantly in the unlit room until just after before 10 p.m. And then drum rolls brought Bruckner's symphony abruptly to a close, in the blistering silence a bit hard on my lower lip. It is reported, said the announcer, that our Führer, Adolf Hitler, has fallen at his command post in the Reichskanzlei, fighting Bolshevism to his last breath. I gasped at the air, as if it were the very first breath of life. The predatory zeitgeist that had perched on my shoulder, whispering its seductive promises into my fervent youthful ear, had suddenly flown. The Führer was dead, finished, the burden of my oath to him annulled by the will of fate. Now all that remained of the Third Reich was a comradeship of the men with whom I shared the confines of that little room. Uta turned off the radio. Silence as hard as ice fell upon the darkened room. Then Uta began to sob deeply, as if she had lost the whole world. When you lose contact with your leader, that's the kind of thing that can happen. And the great thing about being a Christian is that that just never happens. Bartmann went on after the war to renounce Nazism completely. He ended up at the prisoner of war camp in England, actually, and ended up living in Scotland and died in Mid-Calder in West Lothian just a few years ago. And his neighbours were fascinated to find out he'd been Hitler's bodyguard when he was a young man. They had no idea that that was true about him because he'd left his former leader behind many, many years before. Our leader has a living contact with every single one of those who belong to him. And just to put an advert in, if you don't know about that yet, if you see Jesus as somebody to be worshipped, to be explored, to be thought about, to be questioned, to be discussed, then you haven't started. We're doing a course later on. I'm not doing it, as you'll hear in a little while's time, but we'll be doing a course called Exploring Jesus. It starts on October the 15th. And it's a chance to find out exactly how you can have that living contact with Jesus, where it's just like his life flows into you, like the branches receiving life from the vine. And if you need to find out about that, or if you know somebody else who does, use that course. Chris and Lizzie Playford are taking it on for the first time, and it would be great if we could just pack out the room with people who need to discover what Jesus is all about. But you know, it doesn't stop there either. Christians are all connected up to their master, but because they're connected to him, they are also connected to one another. There's a whole network of relationships. You have brothers and sisters all over the world. You're connected to people who died before you were born. You're connected to people maybe who've not even been born yet. And you're part of a massive, massive worldwide family. And Jesus says the whole thing is held together by love. He said, the big command I've got for you people is love one another. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Now, people sometimes say, how come this is a new command? Surely it's there in the Old Testament. We hear back in the book of Exodus and Leviticus, don't we? Love one another as you love yourself. But Jesus is raising it to a whole new level. Love one another as I have loved you. You're going to see over the next few hours just how much I love you. Just how far I am prepared to go with nails and blood and spitting. And rejection, because I love you and I'll go to the very end for you. That's the way you have to love one another too. And that's the context in which he gives that verse. How does it start? You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you. Why? So that you might bear fruit. Fruit that will last. Absolutely. Well done. That's brilliant. Okay. Let's look at the second one of those then. We're supposed to be connected to one another in a way that bears fruit. And we do that by loving one another, by supporting one another, to being with one another. And it is so important that we do that. It's so easy nowadays in a very individualistic culture to sit back and take what we want from anything that's there in our life. The church can be part of that too. And we have got a volunteer crisis all over the Western church because we have a culture in which people are being prompted to think more and more of their life as their property, something they can make choices about and do what they want with. And it's not always been that way. Belmont started back in the 1840s when there was no food bank, when 71% of the weekly budget of the people who started this church was spent on food. Because it was a matter of survival. When you had to work all the hours that God sent just to survive. If you go to West Down Evangelical Church out near Cheriton Bishop, you'll find they have their evening service at 3 o'clock, and they have done for over 125 years. Why? Because the people who started that little church were farm workers, and they had to walk several miles before they could have their morning service on the one day off that they had in the week. And they walked miles to get to the place where they met together. They had their morning service. Then they had what lunch they had, and often that wasn't very much. And they had their breaking of bread service at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Because after that, they had to get home in time for the milking. So the evening service was 3 o'clock, and it's continued that way at West Down. It doesn't do that anywhere else. But you see, the walk there, the walk back, the precious time in the middle, it was all the time they had. And yet they carved it out to honor and remember the Lord, to be part of the vine and the branches together. And we need to remember that the people who started this church all those years back in the 1840s, when there are massive, massive problems in Britain, the Corn Laws, the great novels of the 1840s being written, showing up all the social injustices, those people had far fewer resources, far less time, far fewer options than we have today. There has never been a generation that's been able to do more for God than our generation has. And it's vital that we love one another, support one another, and do the work to which we're called and bear fruit all over the place. Remain. What do you say about remain? Well, there are 4 points I just want to make out of this passage of what Jesus says about remaining. The first thing is, you're already, I'm sorry, these are not going to match up because the fonts have changed a little bit, and that doesn't help, but ignore those 4 boxes, it'll all work out. You're already there. You might think, oh, wow, if I've got to remain close to Jesus, if I've got to have his life flowing through me, I need a clean-up. I need somebody to sort me out. And Jesus says, no, you're already clean through the word that I've spoken to you. All you have to do is use what's already there. If the Son of God has come to you and given you a new life, you just need to get on with it. Remain in him. You don't need a new experience. You don't need new techniques. You don't need to learn an awful lot more. Just remain in him. Grow that relationship day by day. Get closer to him, and the fruit will come naturally out of your life. The second thing is, if you remain, so does he. He stays there with you. Jesus says, remain in me, and I will remain in you. I'll be there day by day. Why is it that many Christians, you know, God doesn't seem so far away, Christianity doesn't seem so exciting, the Lord doesn't seem so real as he did once, I don't know what's happened to me. I'll tell you what's happened to you. You've not remained in him. And he will remain there as a living, constant presence in your life the more you abide in him and make him the center of who you are. How do you remain? You remain by following his lead. Jesus says, this is how you remain in me, by keeping my commandments, especially that big one about loving one another. And as you live in the Jesus way, as you put his priorities first, as you get used to spending every day as an act of worship to him, to do the things that he would choose, the things that delight his heart when you do them, the closer and the closer and the closer you get to the life of the vine. And the fourth thing is, Jesus says here, it's about love, joy, and fruit. You remain in me by loving one another. And you'll know my love if you remain in me, as you'll know the love of your brothers and sisters. It's about joy too. I'm saying these things to you, he says, so that you have my joy in you. The closer the relationship gets, the more joy there will be in your life, because you'll know where you're going. You'll know how much I love you. You'll feel so secure, and joy becomes a possibility. And third, it's about fruit. If you remain in me, he says, you'll bear much fruit. Loads of it. Well, it's time finally then that we had a look at the fruit. But before that, here's something that people often say. If God seems far away, guess who moved? Now, you can criticize that smart statement, because sometimes God seems far away and you have done nothing about it. And the Bible is full of people like Job who say, where has he gone? If only I could stand before him. People, and sometimes God removes himself from our direct expectation of him for our own good. For various reasons, because he wants to teach us something, because he wants us to seek after him more earnestly, for all sorts of reasons. But in general, the principle is what Jesus says, abide in him and he will abide in you. If you remain in me, I will remain in you. And in general, if God seems far away, the first thing you've got to do is look at yourself and say, am I remaining in him? Am I really doing that? Am I building the relationship with everything I've got? Am I looking on the world with Christ's eyes? Am I praying for more of him day by day? Because if I do, I will know his presence. Finally then, not quite finally. We've got this to come first. Let's try it one more time. How does it start? You did not choose me, but
I chose you.
And appointed you, so you did. For to go and bear fruit, and it's fruit that... Hey, we're almost there. Good, I'll just try that once more time on you, and then we'll have it. Bear fruit. This final one then. What does a fruit mean? And I think it's important at Belmont that we ask this question, because we are in the middle of a 3-year exploration of what discipleship is all about. A lot of our teaching last year, in 2018, was just about discipleship in general. What does it mean to follow Jesus and be a Christian in today's world? We spread that out a little bit this year to talk about what does it mean to follow Jesus together? How do we express our discipleship in our relationships with one another? And next year we'll be going on to say, well, okay, fair enough. Once we've got that right, what does it look like when we go into the rest of the world? How does me being a disciple of Jesus affect other people out there? So next year, we're going to be thinking a lot about fruit. What kind of fruit should we be bearing? What is it all about? What is fruit, anyway? Well, some people say that the fruit that Jesus is talking about here is people coming to faith. And that can certainly be true. Paul talks in Colossians chapter 1, for example, about the gospel is bearing fruit over the whole Roman Empire, all over the place. And he obviously means by that, churches are springing up. People are finding faith. They're coming to this relationship with Jesus, with the life of the vine flowing into them, and you can see that happening. So fruit is people being converted. But it's not just that. The New Testament talks about fruit in many connections. One famous bit is Galatians chapter 5, where Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit, the things that the Holy Spirit wants to produce in our lives. A different relationship to God, a relationship of love, joy, and peace. A different relationship to other people. Patience, kindness, and goodness start sprouting like grapes on the surface of our lives. And a different relationship to ourselves, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. So which of them is it? Is it bringing people in to become Christians, or is it my character improving itself? Well, it's all that and more. Fruit, I think, is basically anything that you produce in your life that you wouldn't produce if it weren't for the Spirit of God. Fruit is the impact that Jesus has on you. And fruit is something that's unplanned. You never find trees about this time of year thinking, oh dear, the autumn's coming up, the time of harvest, I must produce some fruit. Think apples, think apples, think apples. That'd be pretty stupid, especially if you're a pear tree. But it doesn't do that anyway, does it? It just does it naturally. Fruit just appears on the tree. And the things that you will find coming out of your life that you haven't planned, that's fruit. There's a difference between fruit and works, isn't there? This building is obviously built by somebody. It's a pretty weird building. But nothing just happens like that, does it? It's been built. It's a postmodern department store or something like that. And it's trying to get your attention. Look what we've built. Aren't we clever? That's something that's done by humans. Fruit is something that just appears naturally without anybody having to strain or plan. That's what we're talking about. And so Ed Rice says once again, or John chapter, oh yes, where is the reference? John 15, 16, excellent. He says, excuse me. That's right. And as we produce fruit of all kinds in our lives, as we see things coming out of us that we haven't planned, but they're just there because we're living so close to Jesus that the good stuff happens without us even noticing it, we will be fulfilling the dream that Jesus had for his church. He's the vine, but the fruit's going to appear on the branches. The branches are you and me and everybody else in this fellowship. And the more fruit we produce for him, the more the glory of Jesus and the more the world out there will see the wonder of the love that he has to show and the life he has to give. Let's sing again.